Well, hey, so we talk about change a lot here. I've even said to some people that the one thing we want to be sure of is that we maintain a culture of change, an expectation of change, of kind of constantly wondering, you know, is God up to something new? Because we think that really creates in us an expectation of God doing something. So we change things a lot. There's always something new. You never know what's going to happen when you come in. But the one thing that I don't think you'll ever see change here is our focus on Jesus. That's our constant. I mean, that is the thing that will never change. And so these last 6 weeks of this series, this conversations series that we're on, they've been all about asking ourselves, you know, what are the conversations that we need to have with Jesus? And hopefully that has been something that has really spurred you on to reconnect with Jesus every day and in new ways, that focus on Jesus. Now today, we're going to shift gears just a little bit. We're still going to talk about Jesus, but for the next 3 Sundays, we're going to be looking really specifically at what it means to follow Jesus out into the world in terms of the conversations that we have with other people and kind of how we think about that. So Jesus is still at the very heart of this. But hopefully, having had these conversations with Jesus, now we start asking, okay, how do we take those conversations out and have conversations with our neighbor? And what does that look like? So today we're looking at a conversation Jesus has with a woman, a bleeding woman. It says, actually, she's subject to bleeding. Now, that's a nice, benign way of describing the problem. I'm going to be graphic here, and I apologize in advance, but this matters. We're not talking about a scratch on her elbow. We're talking about menstrual bleeding and 12 years nonstop. Guys, to put it in terms you understand, we're talking about 12 years of PMS here. But for this woman, it's far worse than that. In the Jewish context, blood of any kind, but blood was considered unclean. And so a woman who was subject to bleeding was considered an unclean person. What does that mean? Well, primarily it means that she wasn't allowed to participate in the religious festivals that the Jewish people had. Now, even that is worse than maybe we consider it here. For some of us, it'd be like, whew, I don't get to go to church. All right. But for them, these religious festivals were the heart and soul of their faith. They reminded them of what God had done and who God was. It was so critical to their faith. But an unclean person was not allowed to come anywhere near those festivals. It'd sort of be like coming here on one of the Sundays when we had communion, but you wouldn't be allowed to come up and take. Not only that, you'd have to stand back there on the other side of the curtains so that none of us had to actually see you. You know, it's probably worse, though. Someone who was unclean, it meant that they weren't supposed to touch anybody else. No handshakes, no hugs, not even a pat on the back. In fact, if you were passing in the street and the hem of your robe touched this unclean person's clothes, you were unclean. And then you were not welcome in the worship service anymore. I can only imagine that after 12 years of that, the thing she wanted more than anything was just a touch. So she reaches out. She reaches out to touch Jesus' robes. If I can just touch him, she thinks, I'll be healed. I'll be whole. Man, talk about faith like a mustard seed. No prayer needed. I just need to touch him, and I'll be made whole. That's all she needs, and it's all she wants. Now, let's stop and think about that again in her context, remembering what life was like for this woman, this kind of ostracized, unclean, pushed aside person. If we tell the truth, her hand reaching out to touch Jesus, it's really about a lot more than just touching his cloak. You picture that hand reaching out and what it represents, what that hand is a metaphor for, is her need to be made whole. She's reaching out because she's desperate for hope. Her touching Jesus' cloak represents every one of our struggles for meaning and purpose and wholeness and life. That's what the touch means. Our community, I'm convinced, is absolutely full of people just like her. People who are reaching out for something. Their hands are grasping for a touch of something that will bring meaning and purpose and wholeness to life. They're grasping for something that will set them free and that they can grab onto, and it'll lead them to life. The woman in our story this morning, she's not looking for a relevant, hip worship service. She's not looking for a church to join. She just wants to touch Jesus. Truth be told, she probably isn't all that interested in the religious institution, because for 12 years, that religious institution told her, "You're not welcome here. Stay out there." She's not looking for church. She's looking for a touch. We're going to come back to that in a minute. Now, Jesus, as she's approaching to put her hand on his, just touch his clothes, Jesus is on an important task. I mean, a really urgent task. This is a life and death task. Jairus' daughter is dying. She could die any second. Jesus is on a deadline here. No pun intended. He's got an agenda. He's in a hurry. He's got a schedule to keep. Sound familiar? But Jesus is willing to put a life and death task on hold in order to be interrupted. Jesus is willing to put aside this most important task. Okay, let me ask you an honest question. When was the last time you showing up on time meant the difference between somebody living or somebody dying? It kind of puts our busy schedules in perspective. Jesus is willing to put aside his task in order to be interrupted. So let me ask you the hard question there. Are you willing to be interrupted? You've heard me say before that that prayer is us allowing God to bend us for his purposes. At least that's how we should approach prayer. What if God's purposes for you meant that there was someone out there who needed a touch, but for that to happen, you needed to be interrupted? Are you willing? Last week we talked about those mountaintop experiences. We talked about those moments when amazing things happen that remind us how amazingly good God is. In our small group this week, somebody reminded me that, you know, those mountaintop experiences, those really meaningful moments, usually, maybe most of the time, they're really pretty small and they're easy to miss. I tell you what, I guarantee you'll miss them if you're not willing to be interrupted. Imagine yourself in a coffee shop. It's your morning off if you get one of those. You've been looking forward to this, you know, this 1 hour, 2 hour block all week. And you walk in and you order your fat-free, sugar-free, decaf, venti caramel macchiato. Well, actually, times are tough, so you just get a small decaf. All you want to do is sit down with your cup of coffee and read the newspaper. So you walk over and you pick that chair, you know, the big comfy lounge chair. There's usually two of them side by side and a little coffee table in front. And you sit down and you spread out and you just relax. And it feels great. And you open up your newspaper and you're reading. And then you're aware of somebody sitting down beside you, you know, in this chair. And you kind of scoot over a little bit and you rearrange your newspaper and you keep reading. And then you're aware of this feeling like that person sitting there is looking at you. And then you hear a sigh. You kind of risk a little peek. I don't know, it's an older woman. She looks pretty frazzled, maybe a little sad. There it is. It's decision time. Are you willing to be interrupted for the sake of Jesus? Or will you choose your own comfort. If you're willing to be interrupted, maybe you'll look over and start a conversation and you'll discover that this woman just got off the phone with her son who lives about 6 hours away, who she hasn't seen in 6 months, and she just wants to see her son and her grandkids, but he's too busy and she's desperately lonely. Are you willing to be interrupted? Are you willing to stop and look at her, make eye contact, and basically say, "Who touched me?" Because when she sighs, when she sits there and she's reaching out to try to touch the robe of Jesus, desperate for that thing that will give her hope and that will give her life, are you willing to be interrupted so that you can stop and turn around and say, "Who touched me?" I'm increasingly convinced that our days are full of opportunities like that, full of opportunities to be the hand and the feet of Jesus, full of possible encounters with desperate people, but we don't even notice because we're racing to our next appointment or too wrapped up in our newspaper or our laptop, or iPod. See, Jesus, in the story, he's not just willing to be interrupted, he wants to be interrupted. He's looking for an opportunity to be interrupted. He stops, remember, on this life or death journey, this task, this mission to go and save Jairus' daughter. But he stops, crowds of people all around, and he says, "Who touched me?" What difference does it make? I mean, The bleeding woman, she's already been healed. She could walk away from there fine. What different? Why does Jesus need to know? Why does he want to know? I think it comes down to relationships. Jesus wants to look her in the eye. He wants to talk to her. He wants her to know that she's more important than this medical condition. He wants her to know that she's valuable, more valuable than she's treated by the church. He wants her to know that she matters. In fact, she matters so much that Jesus is willing to put this life or death mission on hold just to look her in the eye and talk to her. And what does he say? He says, "Go in peace, free from your suffering." Go in peace. You know what that is? That's a blessing. He blesses her. He blesses her with kindness and love. He blesses her with meaning. He blesses her with release and wholeness. For Jesus, people matter. Broken and hurting people matter. And that's why this conversations series is so important. First, so that you know you matter to Jesus, but even more so, because the people out there matter to Jesus. That's why we're rethinking and talking about our values of being an externally focused church, because people matter. That's why we talk about having an eye on those who are walking away, because sometimes walking away is the way that people express their need for a touch. They matter. Souls matter. Here's the bottom line for me. It's one thing to say people matter. It's one thing for a church to talk about being externally focused. To be perfectly honest, it's easy to say that. It's easy to say that we care about the souls of people out there in our community who are desperately needing friendship, acceptance, touch, release, whatever it is. But nothing will change until it moves beyond a statement and becomes our priority. It won't inform our lives together until we take those steps to be intentional about looking for them, not just being willing to be interrupted, but wanting to be interrupted. These kinds of spiritual, godly, mysterious conversations, they only happen when we're looking for them and praying for them and hoping they happen. I want to tell you a story about somebody choosing to be intentional about this, about having a spiritual conversation with a stranger. Vic Pence, I don't know if you know that name. He is the senior pastor of Peachtree Presbyterian Church. It's the biggest church, I think, still, in our denomination. Massive church. Jaron and I were there. Jaron, I pointed over here. I don't know where he is. Jaron and I were there last week. Their campus actually spawns a street. They've got an under-street tunnel that connects their multiple buildings. It's amazing. Vic Pence, arguably one of the most influential pastors in our denomination, decides, I need to do this. I need to step out into the community and have a spiritual conversation. So he goes to a coffee shop, and much like that little example I gave, he goes in and he prays, God, help me have a spiritual conversation today. And he picks that very same chair, you know, the comfortable big chair, and there's another one beside it. He says, this is a great spot, because maybe somebody will sit there. And he sits there for a while, and he's just pretending to read, and he's praying, God, open the door for me to have a conversation. A few minutes later, this lady walks in, and she's on her cell phone, and she sits down. And he can tell almost right away, she's on a phone interview for a job. She's describing her skills and her experience, and it's clear she really wants this job. After a few minutes, she gets quiet. She stops talking. Her voice kind of trails off. And he can just imagine the person on the other end saying, "Ah, we'll keep your resume on file. We'll let you know if anything opens up." The lady sighs. She hangs up her phone. And she looks over at him, looks him in the eye, and says, "This is so hard." Hello, door flung wide open for a spiritual conversation. And in that moment, this incredibly influential pastor in our denomination realizes he has no idea what to say. He thinks, I can't really say I'm a pastor because it's like pulling a giant skunk out of your pocket. It doesn't work. And I don't want her to think I'm just this frightening old guy who's interested in the young woman who's having a tough time. What do I say? The only thing that he can think to do is he looks over at her and he gives her the thumbs up and he says, hang in there. And he closes his Bible and he walks out. Folks, you can't do any worse than that. But when he talks about this story, he says, somebody reminded him after that, you never know. Maybe, just maybe, that woman walked out of there and hang in there was just enough for her to make the next call. Maybe. And you know what? That conversation happened because he went looking for it. He was willing to be interrupted, and he was hoping to be interrupted. You know what's so critical to realize and what I love about that story? You don't have to be good at anything to have these kinds of adventures. You don't have to be a pastor to be the hands and feet of Jesus. You don't have to have this wealth of biblical knowledge to go chasing out there after people who just need a touch. You don't even have to get it all together and to be all healthy and built up and strong. All you need is to be willing to be interrupted. And then Jesus can use you. The challenge for us this morning is to walk through life looking for those opportunities, praying and hoping for those opportunities, to have a conversation with the people who are desperately reaching out for a touch of something that matters. I want to give you two other stories that will help you think about how to do this. Because I'll be honest, it scares me significantly to think about having conversations like this. How do you do it? There's probably about 50 of us in the church that read a book called The Present Future by Reggie McNeil. And in that book, one of the things he says is, hey, here's an idea. Try this. If you can't think of anything else, try this. When you're at a restaurant or a coffee shop or whatever, the person who serves you, try saying, hey, thank you. How can I ask God to bless you today? How can I ask God to bless you today? Just like Jesus blesses the bleeding woman. How can I ask God to bless you? That simple question. And so he encourages churches and people to try this. One day a church decides to take him up on it. And he gets this email from a guy who says, Reggie, I heard your idea of asking people that question. I go to the Starbucks, the same Starbucks every day, at least once, every day. I'm going to try it. He sends him an email back like a week later, and he says, Reggie, I did it. I walked in, and the person who handed me my coffee, and I said, hey, thanks. How can I ask God to bless you today? And, you know, they looked at me like I was kind of weird, but because they knew me, and there's a hint, because they knew me, they thought about it, and before you know it, 3 days later, I walk in, and these Starbucks baristas are walking up to me, and they're saying, hey, man, let me tell you what's going on. What should I do? He says, I think I'm going to have to go somewhere else to get my coffee. Another week later, he gets an email from this same guy, and he says, Reggie, I told my small group about this, and they were so captivated by the idea that between us, we think we've got every Starbucks in the county covered. There's 13 of them. We'll let you know how it's going. Another week or two later, he gets another email from this guy, and he says, Reggie, I was going on a trip one day, and I stop at a Starbucks that I've never been to before, and I walk in, and I order my coffee, and the lady hands it to me, and I say, hey, how can I ask God to bless you today? And the lady pulls the cup back and looks at me and goes, are you one of those blessing people? And the answer is yes. We are the blessing people. That's our calling. That's our identity. That's what the church is. We are the blessing people. That's why we're here, to bless people. That's our mission, to bless people. Okay, now I figured if I'm going to ask you to do that, I better do it, right? So I'm in a small group. I'm in two small groups. There's the one that the kind of the couples group that I'm in, but I'm also in a Thursday morning small group with some ninth grade boys, and we meet almost every Thursday when we can. These guys wake up at 7 a.m. to meet with me together before school, which is amazing to me. Of course, I pay them off with a free breakfast, but still. So we're having breakfast this week. This was 3 days ago. And we always go to the same place, and we always sit at the same table, and most of the time we get the same waitress, so she knows us. We have this light banter, and we talk sometimes. And so this week, she's bringing us our food, and she sets her food down, and I look at her, and I say, I don't even get it right. I didn't say it right. I said, hey, we're going to pray before we eat. Is there anything we can pray for you about? And she stops. She takes a breath, and she says, yeah. My grandma. Can you pray for my grandma? She's in Romania, and she's really sick. She's not doing well. And I'm going there in 2 months, and I really, really want to see her again before she dies. And then she tears up real bad and she walks off, and my small group boys go, hey, nice idea, that worked great. She ran off crying. Good job, Scott. But you know what we did? We prayed for her right there. We prayed for her mom, her grandma in Romania. About 5 minutes later, she walks back up and she says, thank you. Thank you. That made my day. We blessed her. We lived as the blessing people. Here's my point, my one and only point. We're called to be just that. We're called to be the blessing people. We are blessed so that we might bless others. That was our story when it started with Abraham, who was blessed so that he would bless the nations of the earth. We are blessed to be a blessing. And Jesus says, just as in his prayer to God, God, just as you sent me into the world, I send them. Why? To bless. We are sent out into the world to show people the radical love of Jesus. Imagine, just imagine, what might happen if we all banded together in little groups of blessing people and we chased after the vision of looking for ways to radically and extravagantly bless the world. Let's pray.